You just need to take the step and get out there and do it.
We actually can turn what we love into our career.
You know, I need to do something for myself.
So that you can actually live a life that's different from what society expects you to do.
It's the best decision I've ever made.
What are you waiting for? Are you going to wait another year?
I feel so alive and free.
The Van Life Series, brought to you by Augie Sundays.
Hello and welcome to the Van Life Series. My name is Cam. If you're new to this podcast, thank you for listening. The idea of this podcast is to share stories of people who are living on the road, challenging the norm and ditching the 9-to-5, or at least trying to. We want to find out if you switch to this more simple way of living, which is not necessarily an easier way of living, it's just a different way of living, does it make you happier? Today's guests are Dan and Marlene, who are marley.mish on Instagram. I came across this family online and I was instantly drawn to them. They are 100% family goals to me. They started on the road in 2008 when their first child was one. They now have three children, aged 13, 11 and 8. And I just think their story is really, really interesting. They started in an Airstream through North America and now they're in a self-built Sprinter 4x4 in Europe. They chat to us and give us some really insightful tips on homeschooling, what it was like traveling before social media when you can't just jump onto a blog and have a look at where all the great places are to go, and what it's like as a family of five traveling full time on the road. They're currently sitting on the beach in Croatia. You can hear the kids having the best time in the background, and I cannot wait for you to hear their story.
So our story started back in 2008. We had a newborn kid. We were taking her to daycare. We felt like we were missing out. It didn't feel quite right. So we bought a trailer and we decided to take her on extended trips to see the world. And that's what we started to do. We started driving across the country thinking we'd get some wanderlust out of our system. And what happened?
I mean, we didn't initially start out thinking that this is going to be our life for the next 12 years and on. We started basically just as a way to be together as a family. And we were new parents at the time. We only had one newborn baby. And what we realized when we started traveling, and we had already been working from home, so it was easy. We didn't have to like take a long sabbatical from our jobs. We were able to just work from the road. And back then, there wasn't really social media, and there were a few blogs that we followed of people doing something like this. But it was mostly just, retired folks traveling the U.S. that we met on the road. So we kind of had to figure a lot of this stuff out on our own. You couldn't just go to Pinterest or Instagram for inspiration to find out, how to do this. And there were no, YouTube videos where you can go and learn about how to build your own van and do all this other stuff.
Right, there's no shortcuts.
Yeah, there were no shortcuts. We had to do it the old-fashioned, original way.
See if it works.
And it was 3G. Everything we had internet-wise, we had to figure out, how to get internet connection. We, 3G actually felt pretty fast, and I think we were able to work off of a 3G connection, and that was sort of what made this possible. But obviously now, with 4G everywhere, really good cell service with, low orbit satellite internet coming online and 5G and all this extremely fast data rates and YouTube and Instagram, all this stuff, it's gotten a lot easier. But after all these years, yeah, we're still in it. We're still as excited as ever, knowing that it's not just, we're from California, it's not just roaming around the West Coast. It's not just going across the country. And then, a few years after that, it became, well, we've got to go see all of Mexico, and we've got to go to Alaska and go see all of Canada. And now we're in a whole other continent in Europe, and we've been to 29 countries here on this side of the Atlantic. We realize that there's still so little that there's still so much more that we haven't seen. We've only seen so little.
And our story began a little differently too. We didn't sell our house and sell all our things. We kept it because we weren't sure if this was for us or if it was possible, and we weren't done having kids. So we had two more kids, and every time I got pregnant, we went back to that house, had our doctor's appointments, and when our second kid was 5 months, we took off again. When our third kid was 3 months, we took off on the road again, sold that house. We knew we were done having kids, and this was the lifestyle for us.
I would say living this way has 100% made our family closer. And that was ultimately the goal that we wanted to have at the beginning, is to be closer as a family. Every time somebody we talk to about this lifestyle, you know, it's different because we started doing this, living this way when our kids were, you know, babies. Ava, our oldest, was not even a year old when we started. And then when we came back, each time Marlene was pregnant, we left to get back on the road within months of the second and third one being born. So this is all they know. And, you know, it's a lot different to do it this way than to have a family of five, live in a traditional home, go to a traditional school for years and years and years, and then decide that you're going to pull up roots and take off. That's definitely feels to me and seems to me from the people that we've talked to a much harder transition. And I think kids in those situations have a harder time getting comfortable on the road. I'm not saying that it's not possible. We've met some kids that really thrive and really enjoy it going through that process as well. But for us, this is how our family dynamic works. This is how it has always been. And I would say that having three kids has really helped as well, because it got them much closer as siblings. We've also met families that have, you know, less kids, like especially the ones that only have like a single child. It becomes very difficult to homeschool a young child, and you know, you have to be the disciplinarian on one hand, and then moments later when school is done, you have to be the playmate. It's a little confusing, you know, for a young kid when that's the situation. But for us, you know, it's definitely made us much closer as a family. We see each other 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I think for a lot of people, that may sound like a nightmare for them, because I think a lot of people are used to going to the office, not seeing their kids for 8, 10, 12 hours a day, and then, you know, try to spend time together on the weekends. And we're not like that. We see each other all the time, and we know exactly what everybody's like. You know, we're just much, much, much closer as a family. And sure, from time to time, like, we don't mind, now that our kids are old enough, we can put Ava, who's 13, in charge for a little bit while, you know, we go out on a walk.
Right. That's a big difference now. We're not, the kids don't need 100% babysitting. We can go for a walk and have private time for ourselves as well, and the kids.
Yeah, and the fact that there's three of them, you know, they're each other's best friends. And the, you know, it's, I think about when I was a kid, I have a brother who's 2 years older, and Marlene has a brother who's 2.5 years younger. You know, like when we were in school, we didn't really hang out with each other, but with our siblings in school, because, you know, they're older, they're different grades. Like a sixth grader is not gonna hang out with a fourth grader.
Yeah, no way.
But except in our school is totally different. Everybody, you know, basically goes to the same school, has the same teacher, and everybody help each other out. Of course, they'll fight and they'll argue, and then they'll accidentally butt heads here and there. But I think that's the beauty about having three kids, is that if two of them are fighting, there's always a third one that can kind of help equalize the situation, and they're back to laughing and playing in no time.
So yeah, we homeschool our kids. We are about to start our 9th year of what we call road schooling. In the beginning, we weren't really thinking about that we'd be traveling or think that far ahead of what we would do.
We didn't think that we would do it for this long. We really, you know, when we started with just one kid, we had, you know, like 5-6 years before she had to be in kindergarten. So we thought, well, nobody travels for that long.
Yeah, that's plenty of time.
Yeah. So then we had our oldest going to kindergarten, and in fact that was 5 years into our full-time traveling, and we actually thought we were going to stop. We considered, okay, maybe I get back to get a full-time job instead of doing freelancing, buy a house, and then settle. And in fact, we did both of those things that year, except what we realized, the second we closed on that house and I got the job, the first night in that house, this is in 2013, all five of us were in the same room of a three-bedroom house. And, you know, we were just sitting there, like, we wanted to sleep in the same small space because that's what we're used to. And that's what the kids grew up doing. So we wonder, like, we don't want to be here. It sounded like the plan that we're supposed to have after 5 years. But then when the time came, push came to shove, we didn't want to do that. So then we ended up putting that house on the rental market and then went back out on the road again. And my job that I got for the next 5 years, I worked for them as a remote employee, which, you know, got us back out traveling. And then that was sort of, that took us all the way up until just before we came to Europe. But yeah, so when we decided that we didn't want to put the kids in school and live in a house, just luck would have it, like, we did some research, and then the school district that we used to belong to in our old hometown of Ventura had this, like, homeschool charter open house. Because we're not educators ourselves, we're not professionally trained, so we didn't know exactly where to start. We've talked to a few homeschoolers, you know, but it just kind of seemed very sort of ethereal. It didn't seem something that we can get a solid grasp on. But this homeschool, like, charter open house really kind of opened our eyes. We went to it, we met with these teachers, and this program was, like, part of the public school system. And they assigned us a teacher, and they met with the student every 20 school days?
Every 20 days on Skype.
On Skype, and then they gave us material. They gave us $500 worth of, school supplies every year or every...
Yeah, every year.
Every year. You know, so for the first 2 years, we did that. And we felt like that was really helpful to get us sort of accustomed and acquainted with the idea and the concept and the... You know, the things that we were supposed to do. And after those 2 years, and that's when our second kid was going into school, and that's when we realized that we didn't need them anymore, that we can just do this homeschooling thing ourselves, and it was going to be much easier and much more catered to what our kids are learning. What we needed to figure out in those first 2 years is how to make sure that our kids were learning, how to the signs that you can see whether or not they're succeeding in this process or not. And also, like, how do we know that they are keeping up with the levels that they're supposed to be?
Right. And I think also building confidence in ourselves as teachers that we're not messing things up. Like, we're...
Right. Because, you know, just as anything else, if you've never done it, you don't know when you're doing it wrong or when you're doing it right. So those 2 years of handholding really helped us. So, you know, from that point on, yeah, we just, we used a combination of online learning and also traditional workbooks. We buy them workbooks that are specific for each kid's grade level so that we know, you know, the things that they're the stuff that they're supposed to know, either in science and math and history and social studies and stuff like that. We make sure that they know all that stuff. Then everything else they learn from our travels is just an extra bonus that the normal kids in a normal school wouldn't get.
Yeah, so when we were in Greece, we went to the Parthenon and we learned all about it, and they could see it and have these memories imprinted in their travel memories that they can always recall.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, international travel, we get to see all these different things, but even within the United States, we spend a lot of time for the last, like, I want to say 3 to 4 years of us traveling around North America, we focus a lot of our travels around the national park system, which I think is a great, great way for not just families and, you know, also just single adults or couples to travel. And I think a lot of them do that. You know, you can set a goal about seeing all the national parks if you want. But besides just the parks, there's over 400 sites, monuments, historic sites, I think preserves. National lakeshores, national seashores. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are so many places that you can go in, and some of the smaller national parks sites within the system are actually some of the better ones, and they all have a what's called a Junior Ranger program, which is like a workbook, some free built-in curriculum that you can get from every visitor center. Most of them are free. Some of the bigger ones now charge through their concession stand, but you know, you can get it, and then you can spend the whole day, or some of them take a couple of days, to go through the workbook, and at the end of it all, you turn it in, and you work with a park ranger to go through the work that you did, and then they get like a free badge or a patch.
Yeah, you get a choice sometimes.
Really cool way to kind of, you know, make your visit really worthwhile from an educational standpoint. So we actually think technology is an important part of our lives, an important part of the kids' lives and their education as well. It's actually something that has made this lifestyle much more sustainable for us. I can understand if somebody who's going camping for the weekend with the family and they don't want to have phones and tablets and video games because they do that at home. But when you live this as a lifestyle and this is how your everyday is, we're not just going camping every day. We're not just going on a vacation every day. This is our life. So we want our kids to be in touch with what normal life is. The only difference is that, you know, our door opens up to a different view potentially every day. So they use tablets, they use phones for school, they use tablets and phones for communicating with their friends and playing video games. You know, they use it to
read on their Kindle, a lot of ebooks.
Right, especially with books, it's like, we carry actual books, but there's only so many we can carry with everybody having different interests and wanting to read different things. A lot of our homeschooling revolves around books that we check out from our local libraries. You know, that's one of the things that we do is we have a couple of library memberships in California. And instead of having to get physical books, we can just go check out books that they want to read from anywhere for free. You know, so yeah, we're not against technology. In fact, we're for technology. We want our kids to be fluent in these technologies. In fact, our oldest Ava is now really into art. So we actually got a drawing tablet, you know, that she's drawing on hours and hours and hours every week. And in fact, if you want to go check out her art, you can go find her Instagram account through our main one at molly.mish on Instagram, and just to see, you know, the kind of stuff that she's doing. Just because this lifestyle by nature is them spending a lot of time outside. And of course, it's not always like that. There are going to be days when the weather is really bad and we don't want to be outside. And there are going to be days when we're like exploring a city and we're doing a lot of walking and we get tired when we come back. It's not reasonable to say, hey, look, we're gonna be living like we're in the 1900s. Well, 1900s not that long ago, I guess. No. 19th century. We're gonna be living like, you know, like we're on the Oregon Trail. Like you have to go, you know, like carve pictures into trees, right? So we want these kids to have, you know, all the things that you would have in a modern life. And like I said, just because the nature of this lifestyle is that they're spending a ton of time outside, that's never a problem that we don't think that they're spending enough time outside. So in fact, sometimes, you know, it's nice for them to just be inside and lay down and watch a video, watch a movie, or play a video game, or read a book, or, you know, doing something inside and be quiet and calm instead of running around outside, because that's what they do most of the time. I don't really see any judgment. Nobody really does it to our face, at least anyways. I'm sure there's people judge, you know, people have their opinions and people want to do things their way. And like we were saying about just homeschooling in general, it's like not every parent wants to be with their kids 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. a lot of adults enjoy their time in the office. A lot of adults enjoy their time, you know, doing like adult activities with their adult friends. But that's totally fine. Like, we don't judge them, because we had that time in our lives, and we will have more of those times in our lives when the kids are older and gone to college and, you know, experiencing their own lives as adults themselves. So, you know, we don't judge them, but I think, of course, there will be people that say, oh no, you're not doing this right. You're not, I mean, it's a strange world these days. A lot of people have a lot of things to say, whether they're right or wrong. You know, it doesn't really bother us, but nobody really says it to our face. A lot of it has to do with the fact that they can see our kids. They can see how they behave. They can see that, you know, they are as normal as you can quote-unquote be normal. But they're also, like, extremely smart, and you really wouldn't think of them as, you know, what the traditional stereotype homeschool kids would be, like, you know, works on a farm back in the day. But like, modern day homeschooling is a totally different thing. People are very connected these days. They have friends online that they talk to, that they chat with. It's one thing to have experienced this themselves and have judgment about it. It's a whole other thing to just make a blanket judgment and say, you know, this is not right, but I don't know. I'm, you know, even though I've never done it.
I think a lot of people, like the biggest concern that they have when, like, how did your kids socialize? Like, how they don't have a best friend. And we tell them, like, they are each other's best friends. And they get thrown into so many different situations with different kids of different age groups and adults, different backgrounds, different cultures. And they get to interact with all these different kind of people and figure out how to be friends with people.
Yeah, so like we were saying about them being in different grades and how, like, a typical, you know, a kid who goes to a grade in a regular school would have a bunch of kids that are exactly their same age at their same grade as their friends. So they get a very, like, a flat perspective of what it's like to have other kids as friends. But for us, it's like our 13-year-old knows how to work with and how to, you know, interact with 8-year-olds and 11-year-olds and vice versa. Versus, you know, just having a very sort of, I don't know, I guess bias towards, like, kids their own age. Our kids don't have that. And also, socializing, as far as socializing goes, we actually meet up and travel with a lot of other families. Not all of them are full-time travelers like us. A lot of them are just kind of seasonal travelers. You know, they'll go through, like, 3 or 4 months, and some of them will travel for a year. And because of social media, we end up meeting up with a lot of them. And then the nice thing about these sort of meetups is that if they're also either full-time traveling or at least seasonally traveling, we could be traveling with another family for days, if not weeks, at a time. And they get really, you know, like, involved with a day-to-day, and then they can become really close friends really quickly compared to how it would be, like, in a standard, like, household setting. Just imagine, you know, it's like having best friends that you meet at camp. Every summer, you spend a week at camp and you spend every day with that person. And I don't know about you guys, but, you know, a lot of people that you meet at camp can really have these lasting memories. And that's what these friendships are like for them when they meet with other kids. They may not be somebody that you see at school every day, but they're definitely somebody that they'll keep in touch with for the rest of their lives.
Preferred way of camping is to go boondocking or wild camping, as they call it in Europe. Ideally, it would be in a forest or in a desert, somewhere secluded, and our kids can run around. We have our own privacy. And showering, well, that's the problem that's your preferred way to camp. So we don't have just one way to shower. For us, we have multiple ways to shower.
So we have a tube on the roof of our van called the road shower, aluminum tube that warms up with the sun, solar heated, that we can use. That's 7 gallons. Sometimes we warm up water on the stove and put it in a water bottle or scoop it out of a bucket to wash ourselves. Sometimes we drive to a proper campground or RV park to pay for showers. We can also go to
We're at a beach right now.
Yeah, beach showers.
And because it's summertime here in Croatia, where we're at, you know, these beaches have warm sea, like the Adriatic is pretty warm, and then right outside of each public beach, there's like a public outdoor shower that we can just, you know, hang out, spend a day at the beach, and then shower before we go. Or we've even done things like in Albania last year, we, you know, we paid for a small Airbnb that had a shower and also a washer dryer, and then we just used it for an afternoon.
Right.
Because it was so cheap compared to even like a truck stop in the U.S. You know, we've used truck stops. They cost about $10 to $12 for a shower. But the nice thing is you just get the key to the shower and we can all take turn shower in there for 12 bucks. But in Albania, like, I think we paid like maybe 15 bucks. And we got this Airbnb to ourselves. We all showered and we washed like a couple loads of laundry.
Yeah, maybe used their Wi-Fi too.
And used their Wi-Fi, hung out there for a few hours. So yeah, so, you know, just being flexible is the key. I think for us is having multiple ways of doing something. And even camping, you know, as far as camping goes, like, we didn't always boondock and wild camp at the beginning. When we first started, we didn't really know where to go. And there weren't places to kind of look this up. There weren't, like, websites or apps that showed you where to go camping. Like, we had to just drive down the dirt road and figure out what it is. And we had a generator, we didn't have any solar panels. So, you know, we kind of just figure things out as we went. And the shower is the same way. We actually don't, you know, our first couple of campers, actually our first camper, our Airstream, we did have a shower inside the camper. But we ended up using that shower more for storage than anything else. And then every time we wanted to use it, it was a hassle to pull everything out, use it, and then you have to kind of dry it, make sure it didn't spill out, and it uses a lot of our water that we want to use for boondocking. So it wasn't, you know, that's why the subsequent campers that we've had, we just opted to go without showers.
Yeah, so, I think that shower held pack and plays and bouncers and diapers and beer.
When the kids were little, right. Yeah, so, you know, it's evolved over time, but we're pretty happy with our current setup. Because, you know, if you really think about it, like, you spend so much of your time doing everything else but showering. So why dedicate such a large space to a shower in your camper? We can carry probably, if we really were doing this strategically, we can probably carry 2 weeks worth of food for a family of five in our van. So we could probably go someplace and not grocery shop for that long, except we can't carry enough water for that long.
Right.
So ultimately, we have to go find some place where we can get some water. But groceries, that's actually far less of a problem for us. I think the bigger issue with groceries is, you know, we can carry more, like, dry food, dry goods and frozen, refrigerated goods than we can fresh vegetables and fruit. So we end up running out of those in a few days.
And then when we buy a lot to help us sustain us for a few days, it's like on our bed or baskets. It's kind of like all over the place.
Yeah, because you know, like, the fresh fruits and vegetables, you're going to eat them first and they're going to be gone in a couple of days. So it's only on your bed for a couple of days before. And, you know, usually, like, if we end up buying a lot of groceries, on our way into towns to go get water or whatever, we'll hit up another, like, fresh produce stand or a grocery store and get a few more, you know, fresh vegetables and fruits, and then just have a pretty healthy stock of, like, rice or pasta or, you know, like, stuff that lasts.
Right.
So, yeah, that's usually not a problem, you know, because when you think about people that travel like we do, we are not actually off-grid for that long at a time. You know, we'll go 3-4 days in the wild without civilization near us. But usually by then, yeah, we got to go find something to refill. Usually water.
Or empty our toilet.
Or empty our toilet. Assuming that there's no, you know, no way for us to do it at the place we're camping.
Right.
But yeah, so it's actually pretty easy to just, you know, on your drive, even if you're just driving from one spot to another for the day, even if it's just a short half hour drive, yeah, we'll swing by a place to top off. It's pretty easy.
So it's really hard for me to pick a favorite spot, but I think the something that stands out the most to me is our summer trip to Alaska in 2015, because that was where we had the idea, or it was time to change up what we were doing and go smaller and go international. And I always remember that summer in Alaska fondly for that reason.
And also, you know, just the way that we've traveled over the last 12 years have changed so much. The first few years was about, like, you know, when we were first leaving California, we were like, oh, let's go to all these cities and see the landmarks and go eat their, like, food that they're known for. You know, so we went to Texas and got barbecue, went to Nashville and got, like, hot wings and hot chicken. And we went to all these different places to eat and went to the cities. So back then it was like, oh, yeah, my favorite place was like Nashville or the Smoky Mountains, you know. Like, over time it has become more about just the harder to get to places. And I think it did kind of start with Alaska. When we got to these harder to get to places, the scenery and the environment was so much different than what we're used to. And from there it became places like Newfoundland, Labrador that we went to 2 years after Alaska. And we went down to, like, the beaches of Baja, to some of our favorite places to go. And since we've been in Europe, some of our favorite places here are places like, you know, Nordkap, Norway, inside the Arctic Circle, or like the Sahara Desert in Morocco, or like Cappadocia in Turkey, you know. And those just happen, and also Crete, the mm-hmm. island of Crete in Greece. And all four of those places happen to be, like, the farthest away from the middle of Europe than any of the places that we've been. And it's not to say that we didn't enjoy, like, spending time and walking around Paris, or, you know, going to places in, like, Barcelona and hanging out with some friends, but it's just not the way that we prefer to travel anymore. So our favorite places now tend to be these farther away places at the end of a long road. So I have worked over 20 years as a web developer, starting back in 99, a couple years after I graduated college. I started working for a startup in Santa Barbara and have made a lot of good professional connections through that company, where I worked at for 4 years. And since then, I've been doing either freelancing or working for companies, all pretty much from people that I met through that initial 4 years working as a web developer at this company. So, you know, it's been pretty fortunate for me to be able to build those relationships, which is why it's a little actually hard for me to give people advice on how to get into this themselves, because, you know, web development is one of these things that a lot of people can just figure out how to do, but to do it really well requires a lot of experience. And I've been lucky to have been able to do that, to have the time and have the projects to be able to really hone that skill and have people now that I know and can trust me to do this remotely. So I've been doing that for the last 3 years or so since we decided to come to Europe. Before 5 years before that, I was working full-time remotely for a company. And then prior to that, I was working freelance. So for the 12 years that we've been doing this, I've done 7 years of freelance web development and 5 years of full-time. And there's good and bad, you know, from both. Obviously, working as a full-time remote employee, you have a lot more security, you have health insurance, you know, you have a steady paycheck, you have more of a routine to your day-to-day. But that also means it limits you to, like, the kind of places you can go. You have to go places where you have a really good cell connection. You have to keep a, you know, regular 9-to-5 schedule, more or less. And sometimes when we travel to different places, the time zone can change. So then my day-to-day routine gets thrown off because I have to either wake up really early or work really late, depending on where we are. So what we've been trying to do throughout these years of traveling too is to start diversifying our income stream. So we've gotten to the point where we rely just about 50% of our income on my freelance web development work, and the other 50% have been things that we've been sort of building as passive income. We've got a couple of vacation rentals that we manage. One of them is actually the Airstream that we used to live in. We partnered up with a friend in Arizona who has a property that lets us park our Airstream there, set it up as an Airbnb, and, you know, they help manage it on a day-to-day basis, and we sort of, you know, supply the Airstream and help with the logistics of, you know, working and dealing with the interaction online through the Airbnb app. So that's worked out really good. You know, we're hoping to keep diversifying our income so that at some point, you know, we can have as much passive income as possible. But of course, this is all stuff that doesn't come overnight. It takes time. You just have to be patient and you have to be determined to make this work, and it'll happen. My number one advice for anybody who wants to live full-time on the road, whether it be in a van or a camper or a boat or anything, bicycle, whatever, any kind of full-time traveling lifestyle, make sure that you are financially set up to do it. It doesn't mean that you have to be rich. In fact, lots of people have found sustainable ways to do it, because what you'll find out is that traveling like this is actually much cheaper than living in a standard sticks and bricks house. You know, you don't have utility bills, you don't have a lot of the same, you don't end up going out eating, you don't end up like spending a lot of time shopping because you have limited space to be able to put stuff. So you will end up spending less money, but you still have to figure out a sustainable way to do it, because if you don't, it's going to be a very unenjoyable experience constantly worrying about your finances. As for people with kids that also want to travel this way, it is obviously, from our perspective, not impossible. In fact, we didn't start traveling this way until we had kids. But I think the main difference is that our kids were little, they were really young, so this is the only thing they know, and they've thrived in this situation versus having them be in a traditional home and school situation and then trying to move them out. So if that is where a family is coming from, I think the number one biggest thing is to make sure everybody's on board and everybody has the right expectations. Know that they're going to have a lot less personal space. Know that they're going to be doing a lot of things in front of each other, especially if you're in a van like ours and with as many people as we have, and be comfortable with all that. You don't want somebody in the family to be upset with their living arrangement, and that's just going to drag everybody down. So the other thing you can do is just to talk, you know, try to find other people online, try to find other people through social media. There are a lot of Facebook groups, there's a lot of Instagram accounts you can follow, and just ask people who are in similar situations as you or have been in similar situations and have made the transition over to living on the road. Ask them. Ask all the questions you have. You know, of course, have really, really real expectations of what this life is like, because what you see is not always what you get. You see these beautiful sunsets at the beaches. You see these, you know, amazing boondocking spots at the top of mountains. And what you don't see is mosquitoes, flies, spiders, snakes crawling around the bushes. And, you know, and if you got people in the family who's not into that kind of stuff, then yeah, it's not going to be a good times.
And also, this life is a simpler life, but that does not mean it's an easier life. So with your expectations, like Dan was saying, you might be hand washing laundry if you choose to go boondocking. You have to think about emptying your black water from your toilet and managing your water system. So there's a lot of calculating to do, and chores take a lot longer, and it's just part of the experience, which we enjoy, but it's something to be aware of.
Yeah, so for example, like if you use like a water jug system like us, which we use the 7-gallon water jugs for our freshwater supply, and when we boondock, and we have three of them so we can carry them around and have backups, you know, when you run out halfway through brushing your teeth, you know, then you may end up taking 10, 15 minutes to finish a small chore that normally would take you like 10 seconds. And, you know, that goes back to the having the proper expectations of what this lifestyle is like and know what you're getting from it by having to live this more rudimentary lifestyle. And of course, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, you don't have to boondock. You can stay at campgrounds. You can, you know, stay like on the driveway of your friends all over the country. You know, so that still allows you to go out and travel and see places. So everybody's situation is different, which is why I think it's important for you to go seek out people who's doing what you want to be doing and just ask them all the questions that you have. That's really going to help a lot.
Thank you, Augie Sundays, for having us on your podcast and letting us share our story.
Yeah, we really enjoyed it, and I hope you guys are able to learn something from this. If you guys want to find us, we're on Instagram at molly.mish, and we're on YouTube at youtube.com/mollymish.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And if you are looking at van life and you are a family, I hope that you got some tips for traveling with a family on the road. Next week, we chat with Bree, whose handle on Instagram is Does This Count as Van Life? I've followed Bree's journey on socials for a while now. Bree bought a van off Craigslist a year ago, named it Hot Dogs, and with no prior training as a carpenter or builder, transformed the van into a livable space and has now started on a van life adventure. We look forward to sharing Bree's story with you. Follow us on the gram or Facebook at Augie Sundays.